Blog Talk Radio.
As a non-commercial radio station, KENZ FM survives in large part by the generosity of listeners like you, who value public radio and have become a member. Your donation continues to allow us to support local artists and musicians and play the music you want to hear, not what advertisers think we should play. It enables us to broadcast feature story news so you can hear the news, not opinions. Public radio doesn't have an agenda. We're not in the business of pushing our point of view. Our mission is simple. Reflect your interests, not the interests of some corporation. If you believe that having an independent, non-commercial, public radio station in your community is a good idea, become a member now. Find out how by visiting our website at www.kenzfm.com. And remember, independence has a cost, and it's as little as $10 a month.
So, let's get this thing underway. And hopefully the big swing will get my message. So, anyway. Let's kind of go over here real quick as we're waiting for our buddies to arrive, my co-host to arrive. We have, like I say, we have three guests tonight, and let me get a list of who we got on tonight. Our first guest out of the chute will be Michael. Diane, he's a horror movie side effects movie makeup artist. We're going to have Marty Schneider. She wrote a book about her dog and football. And we have William Keck as our next guest. He wrote a book called When You Step Upon a Star. So so I cannot wait to talk to him about that, and hopefully, like I say, our Matthias will be here shortly, and we are going to have a return of Michael Hand, Scott Hand. He'll be on at least for the first guest anyway, and then he's still busy doing his script writing stuff. And once he finishes that, he'll be back with the show full-time, most likely the last week in September, and carry us on through the rest of the year and into the near future. So let's kind of catch everybody up with what has been happening with me. It's basically one of these things that I'm still trying to put the pieces together after I lost my father. And it's still very hard and difficult to get over, and I miss him greatly to this day, and I know that he's always going to be with me, looking above and guiding me from a higher place. I wish he was still here with me, but it's unfortunately that's obviously not going to happen, but. It's tough, and for anybody that's lost a parent or a father, a mother, you know, it's tough. And with that being said, let's jump in here a little bit. And let's see, like I said, we're still waiting for Matthias. I know that he'll be here shortly. But, we also are waiting for our buddy Scott to join us. And I do believe he is on with us right now. Are you there, sir?
I'm here, yes.
Hey, man, it's good to have you. It's been a while since we talked to you. We got about... we got about 12 minutes before our guest starts. I know that you mentioned you're a little under the weather, but I appreciate you joining us Well, we're waiting for the Modern Nightmare to arrive, and maybe you can kind of catch us up, if you'd like, on what you've been keeping yourself busy with, because we missed you so much.
Castle Dracula weekend that we had this weekend, and writing the script there for the people that we talked about, the producers, and trying to get another project off the ground, and another project other than that. And then, of course, we got the awful news that Wonderland Pier is going to be closing after 95 years of the Gillians being in the amusement industry. So doing a lot of documentarian work there for the pier because it's going to be a memory after this year. A lot of people are very upset about this. There's a petition apparently going around to stop the pier from closing because it means so much to people. It's been a landmark on the boardwalk in Ocean City, New Jersey for, like I said, the Gillians have been in business for around 95 years, and the Wonderland Pier opened in 1965. So you figure they were technically just shy of 60 years, but, you know, in that business, when it's seasonal, you count the summers. So they say we made 60 summers. And then, of course, I know about the passing of your father, which is a terrible thing to go through. I've been through it already, losing mine. And, of course, here in town, we lost Jack Morey, who was the co-chairman of Morey's Pier. And I've lost four friends that were very close to me, all in a row. And I just found out another one passed away today, Steve Oxenrider. He was a wonderful friend, a huge collector of the James Bond films. In fact, his collection is going for auction now. And it's basically been every week. Someone that I know has been passing away, so it hasn't been a very fun time, that's for sure.
Well, you know, one of the quotes that that reminds me of, I'm sure you've seen the Fast and the Furious series.
Sure.
When Han died. And, of course, it seems like, well, with the exception of Paul Walker, it seems like every character in that movie that dies comes back. But I remember when Han died, and I remember what Tyrese Gibson's character said to Paul Walker. He said, "No more funerals." And it's funny. That at that point, that scene at that time didn't hit me like it did this weekend when I watched that movie.
Like I said,
it's painful. It really is.
It would
painful.
It would be great if that series was not so fictitious and Heaven had a revolving door like it does in that franchise. Everybody seems to come back.
Well, like I say, with the exception of Paul Walker, but I guess the way I understand it, in the last movie, Paul Walker's character will return in CGI form, and I've heard that his family and his daughter have praised the use of Paul Walker. His brother will be playing him, and they want to honor Paul Walker that way.
Yeah, well, with artificial intelligence, AI, they can do a lot of things these days. Yeah, that was part of the reason for that big strike last year.
Right.
They can replicate our voice, everything.
Well, you know, like in the movie, Rogue One, they brought back Tarkin, and he died in like 86 or something like that.
Yeah, long time ago. Peter Cushing. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was gone, a long time. And they did a pretty good job, you know.
Well, yeah, and I do believe the Nightmare is here. How you doing, buddy-o?
Well, after a very long work week, a very interesting weekend, I am here for another show on the Attitude Era, Monday Live Monday.
Well, and we'll talk about this a little bit towards the end, but you do have a match coming up this weekend at the Lights.
I have two of them.
Oh, you have two?
I've got two matches coming up next weekend. Yep, one of them is at the Lights.
Where's the other one at?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Oh, so you're definitely going to be jet setting then?
Yep, basically.
All right. You know, if you need an agent I guess it's not bad going to Minneapolis and coming back to Fargo, but if you would have had to go to like Winnipeg and then to Minneapolis and then to Iowa, I'd volunteer to be your agent because I actually own a globe.
Well, I mean, that'll be another set for later this year. That's probably going to be happening. So we can talk about that at a later time, but that's another possibility. So.
All right. Well, we got about 5 minutes before our first guest call calls in. And as a matter of fact, I know that both of you guys are going to be interested in our guest. He's a special effects movie makeup artist.
Okay.
He is.
And Scott, you know him real well, right?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we'll do the same format, and you'll be here for the first guest, and then you need to go rest up because you got a killer week as well, Nightmare and I will take on the our second guest with the book of her football playing puppy dog. And we have a star-studded William Keck. He's our third guest. He actually wrote a book called When You Step Upon a Star. He's actually responsible for doing TV units for like the Partridge Family, the Brady Bunch, Happy Days, stuff like that. So yeah, we're gonna have fun talking to him, and and then I can ask him, like, why do they keep bringing back these bad Brady Bunch movies? I'm going to ask him about that, but that's something in the second hour. So, anyway, our first guest will be calling in here soon. But, I'll tell you what, it's good to have us back all together, even though for a short time. Now, I do believe, Scott, now, starting the last week in September is when you'll be back full time, right?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what it looks like.
Okay.
The first couple weeks in September are already piled up against me. So, I'm figuring after the middle of the month we should be able to resume regular, our regular scheduled programming.
Well, here's the interesting thing. It's amazing, though. I mean, unfortunately, I understand you've been busy and you've been gone all summer, but the summer's almost over. Look at this.
Yeah. Yes, I know. They go fast. They go fast, that's
yeah.
for sure.
Well, I've always said that. I've always said after the 4th of July, the year is just gone.
Yeah, this is true. You figure Labor Day will come and go, Halloween will come and go, and it'll be holiday time again, and then it will be 2025.
Right, and, as everybody remembers, 2020 just kind of drug on. It just 2020 would just not get out of here,
Yeah.
And then 2021, it kind of started to normalize again with the way the year moved on. And then 2022 hit, gone. 2023, gone. 2024, almost gone. And then we'll be right into 2025. So, and like I announced last week, we are now booked full on our schedule on the show until the end of 2026.
Wow.
So, apparently. Yeah, so apparently popularity is on our side, apparently. So.
Yes, it's a good thing.
Right. All right, so we'll just wait for our guest to call in, and then we'll have some fun here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just getting a text to the comp. I know it's ribbing for everybody. I'm getting a text saying our second guest, it will be ready. Okay, well, that's good. Thank you. And anyway, so there we go. What else is, like I said, we got a couple minutes here. So you had you said you had two matches last week in Nightmare?
Actually, I had three in the same show, which was kind of interesting, but... Yeah, I had a very eventful show last Saturday night in Miles City, Montana, and it was quite the show, I must say. Three matches in one night was very, very exhausting for myself.
Now you were victorious in these matches, correct?
I went 1-for-3 for many reasons.
So you got cheated out of the other two.
Yeah, basically, I took a very specific role that I needed to take in this promotion, where I signed the dotted line on the contract, and I have I am now officially the general manager and co-owner of Flashback Pro Wrestling out of Montana. And so I got put in this match, a ladder match for the number one contendership, which I already won previously a year ago, so I was not going to be dealing with that in any way, specter or form. So I it took myself out of that match, but I still tried to take the briefcase where I was subtly messed with and unfortunately did not take that. Then I inserted myself in the world title match where I thoroughly belonged for the past year. Then I got distracted by another person who tried to cash in that briefcase that he won previously that night and basically screwed me out of that match.
All right.
And then after that, it was I took matters out on a fellow wrestler. I gave him some brass knuckles to the jaw, passed out 1, 2, 3, and there it was. Then I won. I won that match, so I won't complain.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a commercial break. Our first guest is Waiting Wings. We'll be back after these messages, so don't go away. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle, he is our first guest on the docket. He is a man that can tell us all about Hollywood horror. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you at this time, he is Michael Dance.
Hi.
Hey, Michael. How are you, buddy? Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what, we booked you on the show about 5 months ago, so we finally got this done. Here's how we'll do this, Michael. I will ask you a few questions, and we'll do a round table, and then we'll come back to me and I'll ask you the tougher question. But first off, give us a little background about yourself, and then we can have some fun in the interview. Go ahead.
Background about me. Okay. I'm a... I guess what you would refer to in the olden days as a rubber monster maker. I'm a Hollywood special makeup effects professional. So I do dead bodies, I do monsters, I do old people, I do tattoos, I do pretty much anything that comes off of or is based off of the human form to represent that on movies is sort of the short version. I've been doing that for 20 years. So that's sort of where I'm at. And then...
So you can basically make anybody look good or bad.
Theoretically, with enough time and money. No different than your average plastic surgeon, I suppose.
Well, then we're done. Maybe we'll talk about, maybe I can come visit you, and then maybe you can look make me look like Elvis. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. So anyway, let's talk about a few projects that you've been involved in, and then, like I say, we'll do a roundtable, then we'll come to me and ask you the tougher questions. But let's see, you were involved in the Avengers, Infinity War, the Unnatural Order, First Strike, the Control Group. And it looks like, according to IMDb, you have 5 upcoming projects. Now, if this information is inaccurate, of course, you need to fire IMDb and not our producer. But according to this, some of the projects you got coming up, Skin Deep, The Endless Whisper, The San Antonio Undead, Stomach It, kind of like this show, story about this show, and Beating Heart. You got a lot of stuff on the docket.
I do. A lot of those projects have a lot of interesting stories. Some of the producers are a little neglectful in their updates, so some of those have been coming soon for the last 10 years or so. There's some that are just struggling to find their money. I have a lot of other stuff that's not necessarily on there that's brewing. Stuff I have worked on, as you can see, it's a pretty big mishmash of different scales and genres. Infinity War is definitely a feather in my cap. I was a tiny, tiny cog in a giant machine, but being the Marvel fan that I am, being able to say that I worked on one of the five most financially successful movies of all time is very exciting, and being able to say that my hands were in Vision's ears, so to speak, because that's what I did, is very exciting.
Well, you know, one thing I was going to ask you about is, you know, you mentioned some of these have been on the docket for 10 years. You know, I cannot imagine what that'd be like. You start a project and you do makeup for a character in a movie, and then it's still ongoing, and then
none of these made it that far. They haven't got going. They're in what we would refer to as development hell. Somebody pulled the trigger early, put it on IMDb, figuring that we'd get some movement behind it, which I'm not necessarily a big advocate for, but they added me and any other key people that were attached at the time, and sometimes it goes absolutely nowhere. There might be a project listed on there called Electric Cherry. I've been attached to that since 2009.
Wow. So a lot of these projects are kind of like my radio career.
From what I've heard, yes.
Anyway, so I can't wait to find out what Scott's been telling you. But anyway, we have Michael as our guest here. We got about 24 minutes here. Let's go ahead and do a roundtable, and then we'll come back to me. But Scott, we'll start with you. What do you got, buddy? I guess you guys know each other.
Oh yes, we do. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing all right. How's my favorite state that isn't the one I live in?
Oh, it's doing just fine over here in New Jersey. Everything is great over here. So it's the end of the season. I guess it's starting to wind down. Doesn't look like it outside, but maybe sooner or later it will. How about, I'll tell you, this probably let's touch on what he started, because talk about, you know, how some movies can be in development for a long time before they find the right people. And I think that's something interesting that I think a lot of, you know, casual people don't know about. They just figure a movie's happening, and then where is it? You know, can you fill the folks in a little bit on how things go?
Well, you and I have had our share of discussions about this, especially
yes,
regarding one of
many.
Your projects, but I would say that if I've learned anything
in
20 years,
I know a little bit about that too.
Do you?
I was going to say, Michael, I know a little bit about that too. But anyway, go ahead, continue.
So I always tell people there's five stages to making a film. You've got development, which is where a lot of films get a quick burst and then find themselves a little out of gas. It's the stage where we piece everything together to try to get a project off the ground. And then, if you're not a studio picture, in which case the studio will either greenlight you or they won't, if you're an indie picture, you're out hunting for money or ways to leverage an asset you have to get your movie made. And the general path to independent financing of a movie is, I think the average path is like 7 years. Some movies take longer. Obviously, some take less. That's where we get the term average. But, yeah, it's the running the numbers. It's the trying to get people to lend their name to your project in an official capacity, hoping that'll move the needle a little bit. It's all of those things. And then with the, you know, you saw those things on my IMDb page. It's pretty common with a lot of producers having that. I've had the blessing to have people latch on to me and want to bring me in early, and which is why I have some of those credits. You know, somebody moved the needle enough, but not quite enough to get the money going. So the project is sort of on a shelf or on a back burner simmering. And I always tell people I have projects in my back pocket all the time. You know, if I happen to meet somebody in my side journey trying to get other people's projects off the ground, and they're like, do you have a project based on a homicidal orangutan that shits glitter? And I'll be like, I do have one of those. It's been sitting around for the last 5 years. I'm so glad you asked.
You just got to make sure you maintain PG language, though.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Being in the motion picture industry has completely ruined me. I have to really work to self-censor. I hope I didn't get us in trouble with the FCC.
No, I think we're good. We have Michael as our guest here on 89.1 Ken's FM. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to introduce you to our next co-host. He's the modern nightmare, Matthias. Now, one thing about you that he might be able to recommend you to is, you know, after he's done in the ring with some of his opponents, they don't come out looking very good. So maybe he can recommend you to his opponents to help fix their face after he clobbers them with a brass knuckle. So, Nightmare, what do you got? Go ahead.
Well, yes, you're talking to the man from every woman's greatest dream and every man's worst nightmare, North Dakota's number one heel, general manager and co-owner of Flashback Pro Wrestling, heavyweight champion of All Out Pro Wrestling, Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion of Rudo's Promotions, NSC World Tag Team Champion, and honorary member of the New World Order.
The following announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
Matthias, welcome on to my part of the program. One of my, when Icon mentioned we were going to be talking to you and stuff like that, I kind of came up with a couple of interesting questions. So my first question would be, who is one of your main leaders or heroes or influences that got you into doing effects and stuff like that in film?
It's an interesting question. My journey's been very non-traditional. I grew up going to the movies and loving the movies, and it didn't really register until halfway through college that this could be a career. So my focus on this side of the film industry came later in life. And while I have to say, hands down, my greatest icon in this industry is probably Rick Baker. I think that you talk to most artists that do what I do, they'd probably say the same thing, him or Dick Smith, who was Rick Baker's mentor. I would say one of the earliest influences I had was a makeup artist named Todd McIntosh. Todd has done many things over his career. I'm a big He-Man fan. Todd was the key makeup artist on Masters of the Universe in 87. I know that's the movie that got him into the Hollywood Makeup Union. And prior to that, he got into the Canadian Makeup Union on Clan of the Cave Bear. He was the department head on Buffy the Vampire Slayer for the first six seasons. He's done tons of stuff. His resume as long as I am tall. But he's phenomenal at what he does, and he was one of the first names I latched onto, whose work I really researched and still look to today as a reference point. And he just retired this year, I think.
I do believe he did, yeah. So then my next question after that would be, because, like, for instance, I'm a big horror movie fan, so seeing the effects in all these horror films and stuff like that is just beyond incredible. If somebody were to reach out to you and say, hey, we're going to give you this horror picture to do, or we're going to give you this action film to do, or this comedy, like, if somebody gave you an option for a favorite genre of film to work on, which one would that be?
I don't know that I could pick a genre. I've got a couple of scenarios that are sort of like dream scenarios. You meet a lot of people that are just like, yeah, blood and guts. My fascination with makeup is its vast level of transformability, whether it's subtle or extreme. I think the subtle stuff's a lot harder. But if Sony came to me and said, we're going to give you the next Pirates of the Caribbean movie, I would probably flip. Something where I get to bring in, you know, 50 people, and we just get to create characters all day. Something like that, or something like a big, you know, transformative character piece like Nutty Professor, or Adam Sandler's Click really resonated with me, all the old age and progression work that they did on that. So something,
absolutely.
I guess something where I can play with people, if that makes any sense.
Okay, makes sense. And then, so, for instance, I'll give you a scenario. So this girl named Mia Goth, who is one of my favorite horror movie actresses to this day due to the fact that she's been in the X trilogy and stuff like that, she played not only Maxine, but she played the elderly killer in the first ever film, X. She had to go through, I think it was 10 hours of makeup a day just to get just to look older, like, I think she had to look 30 years older than what she was, and she had to play this older character, and she had so many individual pieces of makeup come together, and she was, like I said, in the makeup chair for 10-plus hours a day, and then she'd go have to work for 8 hours, and it'd take 2 to 3 hours to take it off and have to go repeat the same thing over and over again the next day while they're making, like, individual touches and stuff throughout the filming if they notice a little crack or tear or a little piece that needs to be adjusted. What was one of the longest sessions you've ever had with a fellow co-star? Like when they had to sit in the chair and you had to do their makeup, what was the longest ever session you had to do?
Good question. Yeah, I was very quickly looking up who did the work. It looks like it may have been handled by Weta, by their practical division. I will tell you that if you ever read an interview and they tell you it's 10 hours, it's probably not.
Okay.
The closest I think anybody came to that might have been getting Peter Weller into the RoboCop suit. That took a really long time. A lot of times what makes it into media, in articles and magazines and stuff is a little exaggerated. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was 5 or 6 hours for a really lengthy application. My personal record for how long it took to get somebody transformed, I want to say is about 6 hours.
And that's a continuous, nonstop going, no breaks or anything?
We had to take a couple of breaks. In fact, one of those breaks was a mandatory meal break because of when it timed out based on when the actor came in for the day. If somebody came to me today to do the same makeup, I would probably put my foot down. We did a very lengthy process called construction makeup, which is how a lot of the early Jack Pierce creations were done, like Frankenstein's Monster, where you're basically doing an additive process on an actor bit by bit rather than using prosthetics that were made in advance. And the problem is the materials are very finicky when you're using this process, and they're not terribly durable. I think we got about 30 minutes of shooting before it started falling apart. But because of their limited budget, it was the only option. This was early in my career. I let myself be backed into a corner. We made it work. It looked good. Thankfully, the cinematographer was a good friend of mine, and he was able to work around some of the deficiencies created by the fragility of the process. But I definitely don't think I would allow that to be done that way today. It's very risky for the client because they don't have as much control over how long they can shoot. So I always push for prosthetics now for a lengthy makeup. I did have an actor in makeup from start of application to finish of removal. He was in that makeup for about 23 hours.
Wow. Unbelievable.
The strangest thing I've ever experienced was on that job, and it was because he started the day clean-shaven, and he was in it so long that his beard stubble grew into the glue behind the prosthetic, and it, like, velcroed onto his face. It took us quite a while to get him out of it.
That's interesting.
I'd never seen it before, and I haven't seen it since.
Interesting. Now, before I toss it back to Icon, I got two more things to talk about. So the first thing was, have you ever had a person get into, like, your makeup chair and was like you would start doing their makeup and they would just be, like, difficult to work with by any means? Like, they'd be like, oh, you messed up here, or, hey, this doesn't look right. Or, you know, like, has anybody ever just been, like, and you don't have to name names if so, but has there ever been a really difficult person to work with it working on their makeup or anything like that?
Well, he hasn't worked with you yet.
That's very true. No, I would say the closest thing to that was very, very early on in my career when I was still sort of developing my eye, because you sort of over the years have to acclimate your eye to see certain things you wouldn't normally notice. I had an actor's agent sit there and be kind of spot-checky while I was working. The actor himself is somebody I would work with again in a heartbeat, though. This guy is one of the most highly ranked martial artists in the world. He's Francois Petit, and he played Sub-Zero in the first Mortal Kombat film and did all the fight choreography. And he originally wasn't cast. He told the producers he would have to play Sub-Zero because it was the only way to make the choreography work. But, like, he's nuts.
And interesting fact about interesting fact quick about the you're talking about the newest one, right? The new
No, the original one from 97.
Original. I misheard you. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
So, Francois, I met him on a low-budget action movie, and then he pulled me onto another low-budget action movie. Now I think he's traveling around Spain. Anyway, that was a zany production, to say the least. It was one of my favorite productions of my whole career because of how zany it was. It was basically an action docu-comedy about an all-gay production of The Three Musketeers and a martial artist trying to save his financially destitute dojo. And I think the ruby slippers from Wizard of Oz were worked in there somewhere. It was nuts, but it was a lot of fun. I've had a couple troublesome actors that are just, they won't stay still, they complain a lot, or I think they sort of get into hypochondriac territory where they're like, oh, this burns, and you know it doesn't.
Yeah.
So I can tell the difference. That's happened a few times, but I've gotten really good early on when negotiating my deal with producers that I lay out certain things that are going to have to be the way they're going to have to be, and I make sure I have the producer on my side to take care of things preemptively, and that's helped a lot with that. I worked with an actor that you would all be very familiar with, and I won't name any names, but I will say that Goonies Never Say Die, and leave it at that.
Exactly who you're talking about.
He was an absolute pleasure to work with. We went out to his house, the life cast him, but I think that he probably just has sensitive skin, and I think there were a couple of moments where production was rushing us where he was a little sensitive to some of the stuff we were using, so I could see him. I got to tell you, he didn't really complain. He'd be like, oh, that burns a little, and I was like, all right, let me address that. But he never really complained. He was actually a total pro, and I would work with him again in a heartbeat. But it's something that brings to my mind the fact that we do, you know, if there's any up-and-comers out there, we do have to think about that. We have to think about the condition of people's skin and making sure that we're not beating them up while we're working on them. You know, I've learned to sort of roll with most scenarios and have a solution, whether it's a product solution, whether it's a technique solution, whether it's, you know, putting a brush down and picking up a fan. He was a real dream to work with, though, and I would love to work with him again. And he was
a really good sport.
The director was a complete lunatic. Put us through a lot.
Yeah, I have no doubt. And then my last thing before I toss over to Icon would be, let's say we're working on a film together, and I have to somehow, let's say I get acid thrown in my face. Like, basically, I become Two-Face from Batman. Let's just say, like, somebody throws acid in my face and part of my face starts to melt. Just kind of just go through, like, how many different products or how many different pieces, like, would you typically have to go through, you know, just to make an effect like that happen?
Well, first, we'd have to address, do you want to see the face melt in real time, or are we looking at the after effect?
Let's go to the after
effect. There's a certain amount. Okay, we're just talking about the after effect. We're talking about a prosthetic makeup. So what we would do, we could sort of talk old school versus super new school. Old school, and quite honestly, this is still the norm, even with all the newest technology. We would bring you in for a life cast. I was going to say new school is we would have you scanned and 3D print your life cast. The bigger studios are doing this on bigger and medium-sized projects, but life casting in general, the old way, is still the norm. So we would do that. We would pull up a copy of your head in plaster. I would make a series of what's called corrected molds, which is where we change the shape of the outer portion of whatever the part of the face is to make it easier for the mold to open and close. We'd do a bunch of sculptures. Provided this was a high-budget movie where there's testing, we would go through the rest of the molding process, pull some prosthetics out, do a test application. If everybody didn't like it, we would take notes and redo that whole process. And if they did like it, we'd roll with it. But, yeah, that's pretty much it. Then I'd show up on set with a bunch of rubber pieces. We'd glue them on, we'd blend them off, and we'd paint them.
Okay.
We have Michael as our guest here. We got about 5 minutes left here. I'm going to ask you a few more questions. But before we do this, if our fans want to check you out and see you, do you got a Facebook, an Instagram, YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a TikTok? What do you got?
I would direct them to my website, which is hauntedreamsstudio.com. All my socials are linked in there in the contact page.
And if you listen to our show on a regular basis, if you go to our Facebook page, Attitude Era, Monday Live Monday, like that. Go to 89.1 Ken's FM page, like that. Do a $10 a month donation to Power of the Tower. We'll get you automatically qualified and win an autographed picture from a past guest, future guest, or current guest. And I do believe that, Michael, you did send us a few autographs, or you will be sending those?
Yeah, I can send you some.
You know, it would be really cool, and I'll understand if you turn me down for this, but you know, it would be really cool if, like, if you could, like, send us, like, an old mask or something autographed by you. That'd be awesome. I can display it in my man cave for about a month before I give it away.
Let me see if I have anything. I actually don't know if I do. I might.
All right.
I might
have a rainy
day piece.
One thing I do want to ask you about, you know, I want to save this till the end. You know, you mentioned you were in Avengers. I just got to ask, you know, you talked about RoboCop. Did you have to help Tony Stark get into his costume?
No. I was not on set for that project. I work in the workshop on it, so I didn't actually go to the set to do applications. But I will tell you, as an interesting RoboCop segue, I actually just found an old prosthetic from a movie I did in 2005. It's the last remaining unused prosthetic from that movie. I'm going to send you that.
Awesome.
So the person that applied the pieces that I helped make is a phenomenal makeup effects professional named Bart Mixon. There's a lot of people that geek out over Bart because Bart designed all of the effects for the original Stephen King's It that came out in the 90s.
I geek out.
The company he had with his partner at the time did all that work. But what I was going to say is Bart applied the Vision makeup for Infinity War, but Bart also, if memory serves, was on the team for RoboCop. He's been in the industry forever. He's debatably the hardest working man in prophetic makeup.
You know the sad thing.
Hero of our industry.
You know, the sad thing is you mentioned that you were not on set for the Avengers, so unfortunately that took away 30 of my questions. Like, one of the questions I was going to ask was, did you get to actually apply makeup to Colin Jost's wife?
No, that also would have been handled by a different department. Sadly, that would have been the straight makeup department. So,
oh, man,
doing the prosthetic work were very, very busy and didn't really go out of their lane.
All right. Well, like I said, unfortunately, that took away 30 questions right there. But I will say this, Michael. You have, of all the stuff that you've done and are doing and you got coming up in the future, I do hope that you'd be willing to come back and join us again because, like I said, I have so many other questions about so many other stuff. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time. We only got about 120 seconds left. But you have been awesome, man, and I got more questions that we want to ask you. We have the chat room going crazy right now and wanting me to ask a whole bunch of questions, but unfortunately we've run out of time. Well, would you be willing to join us for part two?
Absolutely, anytime you want, provided I'm not tied up.
or makeuped up or whatever.
Yes, glued to the wall like Spider-Man trying to figure it out.
Yeah, one other quick thing, though. I don't know if you've ever, you know, your family, I'm sure, know that you're a makeup artist. Have you ever done the thing, like, where you, like, you'll put on, like, a mask and you'll make yourself look completely different and, like, go up to, like, one of your relatives' doors, knock on the door, and, like, act like a salesman or something? Have you ever done that?
I haven't, and the bulk of my family lives 3,000 miles away, so that would be a little... There would be a long way to go for a prank. No, I haven't. I honestly am not a huge fan of self-applications. I'm persnickety, and it is so hard to do convincing work on yourself because you lose your whole sense of depth perception while you're working.
All right. Well,
so
I'll tell you what, though.
I think I'd get stuck in that rabbit hole. But no, I haven't.
Well, I'll tell you what, I will keep you in mind when I go to my high school reunion in a couple of years, if I need to look a little better, I'm going to come see you and have you do me up so I look like I did back
no,
in high
that's
school.
No fun. Let's make you look like David Bowie in The Hunger, like you're 170 years old.
Well, all right, we'll do that. I'm going to take you up on that. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, Michael, you've been awesome. We appreciate you. Thank you so much, and we are going to have you on again.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
All right, that was Michael.
Good
that was awesome, huh, guys? So, unfortunately, Scott, you aren't going to be able to join us for the next guest, the football puppy.
I'm fading right now. I'm fading right now. So I will
All
talk
right.
to you guys later.
All right, we'll see you in a couple weeks, bud. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, so let's take a commercial break. We'll be back with our next guest. I cannot wait to talk about the football puppy. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Do not go away. Ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room and walking down the aisle, she's got a story to tell about a famous football fumbling the dog. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the author of Football Freddy. She is Marnie Schneider.
Well, that is a great introduction. Thank you so much. I love that. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's crank this thing up here. We're going to talk a little. We had the Vikings had their first football game Saturday, and they were victorious. So now we're going to talk about Football Freddy. Here's how we're going to do this. I'm going to ask you a few questions, then we'll do a round table. We'll come back to me. I'll ask you the tougher questions. But give us a little background about yourself first.
Well, so my name is Marnie Schneider, and I grew up in Philadelphia, and my grandfather owned the Philadelphia Eagles, and my mom, Susan, ran the team for my grandfather. She still to this day is the only female to ever be vice president, legal counsel, and general manager of a professional football team. So I was really fortunate. I got to travel around and see all these great cities. So about 5 years ago, I started writing a series of kids' books called Football Freddy, and Freddy is a girl, and Fumble the dog, and Fumble really is my dog, Game Day in the USA. And each book takes you on a tour through a different NFL city. So we've done 10 books so far, have not done Minnesota, but we're getting there, and I do love Minnesota. So I plan on making that a top priority this season.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's what I want to do. I want to help you make that book for Minnesota sell a million copies. I want to write either the forward or the back synopsis for that book when you do it.
Deal. Sure. I mean, that's great. I mean, the whole idea with writing Football Freddy and Fumble the Dog was really to share my love of football and my love of traveling and seeing all these great sites and being able to celebrate being a fan, because you know what? There's nothing more fun than being a fan. And I really also am very dedicated to getting kids reading and playing, not necessarily playing contact football, but just playing sports and being involved. So I really think that if kids can read and they can play and make some friends, then their lives will be so much more enriched.
Marnie Snyder is our guest here. She's the author of Football Freddy and Fumble the Dog. And we got plenty of time here. We got 26 minutes. So what I'm going to do is, like I said, I'm going to ask you a few questions, and we'll go to Nightmare, and then we'll come back to me. One thing that is kind of cool, though, you mentioned the Philadelphia Eagles. As you know, North Dakota State sent a great quarterback to the Philadelphia Eagles, Carson Wentz.
Yeah, I love Carson Wentz. I know. Yeah.
Did you ever have a chance to meet him?
I did not, you know, I did not. I'm a fan of Carson Wentz. I thought that he was a great Philadelphia Eagle and a great draft pick. And unfortunately, you know, that's what's so rough about sports sometimes. You know, injuries change the whole entire playing field. So it was really unfortunate for Carson, but I still, you know, root for him and hope that he has success. And, you know, he definitely delivered, you know, a lot to the Philadelphia Eagles and the fan base for sure.
Well, let's talk a little bit about football, Freddie, and Fumble the Dog. Now the puppy dog in the book is actually I do believe it's based on a real puppy dog. Your puppy dog, right?
He is. That is Fumble the Dog. He is a real dog. He is a Chihuahua rescue mix that we rescued about 10 years ago. Although they say that, you know, that they rescue us, we don't really rescue them. So that is definitely true. And Fumble is my real dog. He's sitting here with me right now. And so he is in all the books. Like I said, I've written 10 books so far, Football Freddy and Fumble the Dog, Game Day in Philadelphia, Game Day in the Carolinas, Game Day in Atlanta, Game Day in Pittsburgh, Game Day in Chicago, Game Day in Dallas-Fort Worth, Game Day in Green Bay, Game Day in Tampa Bay, Game Day at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Game Day in Denver, which just came out, and also Game Day in Kansas City, which will be out within the next 3 to 4 weeks before the season starts. So, yeah. And more to come. You know, I just it's something that I spend a lot of time, and I want to make sure that we've got great things that we're seeing in these books, and that the story works well and great characters, and it's been lots of fun, and the feedback has been great. Fans love it, kids love it, parents love it. You know, we've been told that there are books for all ages, so that's a huge compliment.
And just so we can let everybody know, each story is different. It's not the same story with a different cover. It's a different story about each football town, right? And you do plan on doing one for each city,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yes. Oh, no. Each, yes, exactly. And that's why it takes me a while, because I really want to make sure that I get really all the right stuff. So it would be it's something that is really important to me. I want to make sure that we highlight the really special places in all those cities or all those states in a lot of cases. Sometimes we just go and do special things about the entire state. You know, so I really want to make sure that we get that, and that also that each character. So, for example, in Football Freddy and Fumble the Dog, Game Day in Pittsburgh, Freddy is shown around the city of Pittsburgh by a young man named Hugh. Hugh is a real, because I don't know Pittsburgh, so in Philadelphia there's no tour guide because that's where I grew up. But in Game Day in Pittsburgh, Freddy is shown around in the book by a young man named Hugh. Hugh is a real person. He's my college roommate's son. But one of the really special things about Hugh is that he is the best person to show you around the city of Pittsburgh, and Hugh's autistic. So it was really a way for me to celebrate the fact that while Hugh might be autistic, he still is somebody that really knows the city, and that I wanted kids to understand that, you know, it's just because somebody might be autistic or somebody might be in a wheelchair or somebody might have cerebral palsy or somebody might wear glasses or somebody might have a peanut allergy or things like that, which we've definitely been able to incorporate in our books, that they're still great friends and that you can learn so much from them, and that I wanted to be able to share a lot of different things that kids might experience. And so I feel as though we've been able to do that in a really genuine and kind and supportive way.
Well, I'll tell you what, here's the cool thing. When you're ready to do Minnesota, I can hook you up with a couple great Minnesota sports individuals that would be perfect, like my buddy Dick Jonkowski. He used to be the voice of the Golden Gophers, and he,
sure.
He was the Gopher, basketball team for 30 years, and the baseball team, and also he was also famous during he used to be a security guard at Met Stadium for the Minnesota Vikings, and he's famously known for getting fired after kicking Drew Pearson after they did the push-up against the Vikings in the playoffs.
Oh, wow. That's so funny. Well, you know, and thank you. And this is what I think gets people really totally excited and invested in what we're doing, because we all know that getting kids excited about reading is something that no matter where you fall on the political spectrum, we can all agree that getting kids reading is a wonderful thing. So I appreciate all that enthusiasm. And then also sports. We all love to talk about sports or share our love for sports. My books are not really sports books. However, I do try to teach some things about football and about sportsmanship and about the game, because I think that when kids can speak a little bit of sports, it really is the universal language.
That's awesome. I'll tell you what, and then if you ever decide to do college football, and if you do North Dakota State, which would be really cool, I guarantee you, people in this town will not only embrace the thing. I can get you here. I'll get you a ticket for the game, and I guarantee you that thing will sell so many copies. You're not gonna have you can retire after doing that book. That's something we could talk about afterwards. But I want to introduce you to my co-host, the Nightmare Matthias. But we got to do a quick little time out here. We'll be back after this message. Stick with us. And we are back. I want to introduce you to my co-host. It's the Modern Nightmare. He actually plays some football, so I'm sure that you guys have something to talk about. Nightmare, what do you got? Go ahead.
Well, yes, you're talking to the man from every woman's greatest dream and every man's worst nightmare. North Dakota's number one heel, current reigning, defending, undisputed APW World Heavyweight Champion, Rudas Promotions All-Weight Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion, NSC World Tag Team Champion, and soon to be Below Zero Wrestling and NSC World Heavyweight Champion and General Manager of Flashback Pro Wrestling, honorary member of the New World Order, Matthias.
Has been paid for by the New World Order.
Touchdown, Raiders!
Matthias, welcome on to my part of the program. Yes, as Icon did say, I did play a little bit of football growing up, but that's really not the main picture at this point. My main question to you would be right now is, when you go on interviews and you talk to all sorts of people, you get a varied amount of answers throughout all this. But my main question to you would be, who's one of your heroes / main influences that got you into this career path that you've chosen today?
Well, I would definitely say Coach Vermeil, Dick Vermeil, who was the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, the head coach of the Los Angeles Rams, and the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. And he was obviously in college as well at UCLA. But I think that I was fortunate to get to see Coach Vermeil when I was a young girl, and coaching and all the great lessons of grit and determination and discipline. And something, I guess, I still want to make him proud, even though he hasn't, you know, been super involved in my immediate, you know, day-to-day activities in a very long time. I think when you meet people that are so amazing, you want to make them proud. And so I definitely still want to make Coach Vermeil proud.
Okay, and then doing what you've been able to do and living in Philadelphia and stuff like that, getting to meet all sorts of people, what has been one of your funner experiences into going into doing all this stuff? What has been one of your most memorable experiences?
Well, I don't live in Philadelphia anymore. After I graduated from college, I worked for NFL Films, and then I left there after a few years and moved to Hollywood. And then a few years ago, my children and I moved to the Carolinas. So we live here now in the Carolinas. We don't live in Philadelphia. But I love Philadelphia. I would say that my favorite things are getting to go into a school or go into a Boys and Girls Club or go to a Ronald McDonald House and experience what's going on there and do a story time with Football Freddy and Fumble the Dog and read my books to those kids. That is my favorite thing to do. So there's nothing more fun than, I think, for me, going to a school and reading a book and sharing my love of friendship and being a fan and travel and tourism, that's what I really love to do.
Okay. And for me personally, and I don't know if this is a lot of people, this could be with a lot of people, I used to read quite frequently, like almost every day I used to read, but that was more of when I used to be like in school and, you know, you had to read your textbooks, do your homework, or, you know, you were in English class, you had to write like a story of some sort to do a report on it or talk about it later on in class. I used to really like reading when I was a younger kid, but growing up, it just seemed to kind of, you know, disappear from me. I became more of a visual / audio person. So, like, if you were to influence somebody, like, I mean, they could either go do the physical copy, or do you ever, I mean, I'm not sure if any of your copies are out, like, digitally, like, through audiobooks and stuff like that, but have you seen it where a lot of people have, you know, sprung to a physical copy more than a audio, or has it been kind of, you know, a mishmash, I would say?
Well, what I would say is that usually for kids' books, that it's way better for education and for learning for children to have a book in their hand and be able to see the book, and then at least if they can't read the words, then see the pictures that go along with it. So I think that that's something that, you know, we're trying to figure out some of these things, because sometimes, you know, audiobooks are great, and any sort, any way to tell a story or to share a story is always a really, you know, is a great positive thing. But typically for kids' books and my books, although I've been told they're for all ages, they really are like second, third, and fourth grade reading level, that actually having the book in their hand is something that really does make a difference, and they get excited about being able to see the pictures and then talk about that, maybe being at that place that is in the illustration. So I think that those are just things that with kids' books are a little bit different than some other type of young adult books.
Fair enough. And my last question would be, I used to write stories for a newspaper / magazine back when I was in college. I was the head director for our news show. I was a radio host during my radio show. And then I also wrote for what we call the Mystician, which was the first it was a newspaper, and now it became a magazine and stuff like that throughout the campus. And I just really, like, I could sit there and I could tell a story through my own words, but when I would try to type it on, like, a computer and stuff like that, I just found it to be more difficult trying to write it versus me presenting it through my own words. Was writing ever a struggle for you, or did you kind of just, you know, hook onto it and never let go from there?
I think that things are often challenging, and I think that you just have to kind of keep persevering. And I also think that a lot of times you do something and you say, oh, this is not good, and then you don't finish it. But you have to realize that you just have to complete the task. And the more that you do things, the more confident you become. I look at some of my books and I'm like, oh, I wish I had done that, or I wish I had done that. But, you know, if I was to get hung up on all that I wish I had or I was gonna, then you don't ever do anything. So I think that I'm going to suggest for you to just keep writing and to keep doing things, because the more you do it, the more confident you get, and the better you get at it. And so those are just some of my suggestions to you. But certainly, it's, you know, things are hard. Work is hard. Writing is hard. Doing a lot of things, but then I think about it, and sometimes I really enjoy doing things that are challenging, because that's just how our bodies respond well to doing things that are challenging.
Absolutely, fair enough. And if I were to stick with that, like I said, I found it more amusing to talk in my own words instead of writing it down and stuff like that, because I could read it, but then, like you said, I'd find all this stuff, like, I could have done this better, but then I wouldn't hang up on it, I'd move on. But I'm not in that field anymore. I was going to go in there, but I ended up sticking with more video stuff and audio stuff like that throughout my career. But now I drive trucks, so just finding ways to make money. But like being as a pro wrestler as I am, and having to cut promos and stuff like that, it even kind of sticks with me today, because for me, I can mentally think of words to say, and I could say them through all my words. But if somebody said, hey, write this promo down, I might be like, I may be able to write it down, but I would much rather go, hey, just point the camera, let me talk, I'll say my own words. I don't need to write it down, because, and when other people try to write down my promos, I'm like, let me say this a different way, or hey, I'm going to figure this out to say it in my own words, and usually it comes out in their light a better way, but, you know, like I said, for me, it's more of the audio than it is for writing, but if I ever had to, I would, but it's just not my cup of tea at this point.
Well, I think that you're doing great, and I love truck drivers. My grandfather was in the trucking business, so we need truck drivers, and bravo, and thank you for all that, because that is not easy, and so I certainly have tremendous respect for people that drive trucks, and thank you.
And I get to deliver beer, so, you know, if you ever need a nice, fresh Budweiser, Bud Light, you know, I probably would end up delivering it sometimes, so.
Well, that's always, you know, I'm sure that's like, you know, people that are in the flower delivery business, they usually are always happy. People are so excited most of the time when the flower delivery comes. And I have a feeling that it's the same way with the beer delivery.
Oh, absolutely.
Marty Schneider is our guest here on 89.1 Kens FM. And for those of you who listen to our show on a regular basis, if you go to our Facebook page, Attitude Era, Monday Live Monday, like that, go to 89.1 Kens FM, like that, do a $10 a month donation to Power of the Tower. We'll get you automatically qualified to win an autographed picture from past guests, current guests, or future guests. And I do believe that Marty had sent us a few books for giveaways. I believe he did, right?
I think I did. I'm pretty sure that I did. Yes, they should have arrived the other day. Yes.
Okay. There's real quick here. I got a couple friends listening that are Dallas Cowboy fans, and then I'm going to rub it in their face by playing a quick little Minnesota Vikings clip. But they wanted me to play this because you did do a book about the Dallas Cowboys. If I can find it.
I would not say it's about the, although I do have some great friends that are retired Dallas Cowboy players. My book is not about the Dallas Cowboys, but it does take you on an incredible tour through the wonderful cities of Dallas and Fort Worth. You get to go to the Stockyards. You know, you really get to experience all these cool things that are in the Dallas-Fort Worth area as you make your way to the stadium to cheer on the home team. So that's what I love about my books, is that you learn so much about the cities, and that then you get to learn a little bit about football as you make your way into the stadium to, like I said, cheer on the home team.
You did one hell of a job, and the only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
Yeah! All right, so we have Marty Schneider, our guest here, and we have about 10 minutes left here. One thing you mentioned about how cool it is how the book's taking on tours of cities. Like I mentioned, I think my friend Dick Jankowski would be perfect if you do Minnesota, because not only is ties with the Gophers and the Vikings, but he's well known around the community. As a matter of fact, he's made several different appearances on a lot of different sports shows. Like, for instance, he was on this show with John Arcant, the Big Ten treasure hunter. He had all this this guy went around all the country trying to get all this memorabilia from the Big Ten conference. And Dick was on that, and he's awesome, you know.
Well, that sounds great. And, again, I really appreciate you trying to, you know, help me and make connections. That really is so special, and I really appreciate that. So I will definitely take you up on that when the time is right, which will be sometime within the next, you know, couple months. I'll be kind of gearing up to start getting back and writing some more books. It takes, like I said, it does take a little bit of time, because I really do try to make it all great so that the readers and that the fans will say, oh, she really got this, and this is so great, and she really picked some of these great places to highlight and celebrate. But so thank you. I definitely appreciate you wanting to help me. That's just very, very, very nice, and does not go unnoticed, so thank you.
Well, you know, a couple other things I do want to ask you about real quick, and I don't know how accurate this is with what our producer told me, but your grandfather, I do believe, had some business relations with the founder of McDonald's?
Well, so my grandfather is one of the original founders of the Ronald McDonald House. So the charity, I don't know if you've heard of the Ronald McDonald House, the charity, Ronald McDonald House charity started in 1974, and that's 50 years exactly. It'll be 50 years this October. And the Ronald McDonald House is a place where families can stay pretty much for free while their children are in the hospital. So if you're – and there's great Ronald McDonald Houses all throughout the upper Midwest. I mean, I am very close friends with Jill, who's the CEO of the Ronald McDonald House Charities in the upper Midwest. But there's over 350 Ronald McDonald Houses all across the world, and that's pretty amazing because this charity only started 50 years ago. So it's an incredible charity. They're connected in a loose way, but they're obviously still connected by name to McDonald's. But, yes, it's the Ronald McDonald House, and it's a great place for families to stay. If they unfortunately have a sick child, then they have a place to stay, and it really is very special.
And we mentioned that, let's see, so far you did books about Tampa Bay, Dallas, Green Bay, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Atlanta, Carolina, Philadelphia, and if you could save the New Orleans Saint, New Orleans, save them to like the very, very last, because as a lot of Viking fans know, we have a big chip on our shoulder about New Orleans from 2009. As a matter of fact, just before you go, I am going to play a little special clip for you to talk about that, Robert, to kind of inspire you about doing the book about Minnesota. So now when you we got about 5 minutes here left. So now when you decided to do this, Philadelphia, I'm guessing, was your first one. And then did you like think, and after you did Philadelphia, it's like, you know what, I could do one for every team. Or did it not start out like that, or did it start out like that?
No, it did. You know, I wrote Philadelphia, and this is something that really, truly, back in the 80s when I would travel around with my mom and grandfather, I would write stories and I would write creative writing, and I had a bunch of notes, and my mom about 7 years ago said, why don't you take out all those things that you've still saved from when you were younger, and let's do something with it. So I said, I don't know if there's anything there. But I pulled it out, and there was some cute stuff, and I went to a publisher, and they said, oh, we love this. It's great intellectual property. So I wrote about Philadelphia, and I wrote about the great things in Philadelphia to see when you're there, the Franklin Institute, Ben Franklin, the National Constitution Center, the Liberty Bell, things like that. And then I didn't realize that it was kind of a hobby. It was just something fun. I thought, this will be cute. Kids will like it. And then I had tremendous success with my first book. And so then I said, well, let me try it again. Maybe that was just beginner's luck. But it worked again in the Carolinas because it was organic and fun and a nice way. You know, dads love to read my books because they love to talk about their favorite teams or their favorite cities or share experiences. So then I did the Carolinas, and that worked out. And, you know, now I'm on book – I mean, my 10th book just came out, Game Day in Denver, and Game Day in Kansas City will be out, you know, sometime mid-September. So we're just going to keep going because people like it, and I'm really flattered.
So with that being said, there will be 30 books in the series, I'm guessing. But before we do this, so our fans can check out and see it. You got a Facebook, an Instagram, YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a TikTok. What do you got?
So I have it all. I have it all. Not TikTok. I don't do TikTok. My kids do. But so on Instagram, I'm Marnie Schneider 1, and that is my Instagram. I think it's Game Day in the USA too. But if you find me, then it'll get directed to Game Day. On Facebook, I'm just Marnie Schneider. Same thing with LinkedIn. It's Marnie, M-A-R-N-I-E, Schneider, S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R. And on Twitter, well, X, I'm Marnie Schneider, but it's M-A-R-N-I-E, S-C-H-N-E-I-D-R. We took the E out because we ran out of room. So that's how you can find me. And, you know, definitely send me a message. Find us, you know, Game Day in the USA or MarnieSchneider.com. Send me a message, and I, you know, love to hear from people and want to know what your thoughts are. So definitely reach out.
And one other thing I was kind of curious about, you know, in your first book, To Philadelphia, it says up in the corner, it says number one, Carolina says number two, Atlanta says number three, but then when you hit Pittsburgh and so on and so forth, there you didn't put any numbers in the corners. Was that by design, or did you just like, I'm just
kind
not going to count
these? Well, yes. We took the numbers off because people were confused, like, is it age range or whatever? But on the side of the book, so you can collect them all, it will say the number on the side. On the spine of the book,
It'll
tell you the number. But on the front of the book, we took it off because people were getting confused. Like, three, does that mean 3 years old or third grade or whatever? So we just took it off.
Well, you know, that kind of reminds me of, like, Star Wars. You know, A New Hope, it actually was Episode 4. But when that first came out, they would not let George Lucas put Episode 4 because people would get confused. So something's kind of like that.
Yeah, exactly. So that was why we just took it off the front. And eventually when we do reprints of all the books, all the numbers will be gone off the front, but they'll still be on the side because it's kind of fun to look at it and be like, oh, that was the first, you know, just to see the – and then you'll get all the – you'll have all the teams and – then you can collect them all and see the and count. And also, I want kids to be able to use my books as not just necessarily to learn about the community and learn about what's going on in that city, but also get some other things that you can count. You can say, I've got 30 books and I've got this. So there were just many different kind of little hidden Easter egg ways of wanting to get kids excited about reading and playing and learning and being a fan. Those are really our number one initiatives.
You know, and you know, you mentioned the whole age thing. You know, I'll never forget this friend of mine. I bought him a puzzle, and he called me and said, "Hey, I just finished this thing. It only took me 2 months." I'm like, "Well, what's so big about that?" He said, "Well, on the box it said 2 to 4 years."
Yeah, that's
anyway.
Funny. See, exactly. Yep.
Well,
yeah,
I'll tell you what, Marnie,
you
have been so awesome. We definitely want to have you on again. Anytime you're ready to put out your next book, we definitely want to have you back on to promote it, and we will definitely get you all set up when you're ready to do that. We want to promote every single book that you put out from now until they're all complete.
Well, I am very, very, very thankful for your enthusiasm and what you do. Being a radio host is so difficult. I have a podcast that I co-host with two other people, and I just doing it is a lot of work. So you're really prepared. Thank you so much. You're so thorough, and I really appreciate your enthusiasm and wanting to help me get my story out there and get kids excited about reading and playing. So thank you so much.
And if you ever need a last-minute guest on your podcast, you can call me anytime. My line's
Deal.
Always open.
Deal.
All right.
Done. Yeah.
Thank you, Marnie. You're awesome. We love you.
Love you a lot. Love you guys. Love you a lot. Thank you.
All right. Hey, before we go to our next guest, I want to play this. And, Matthias, I know you'll remember this memory, but kind of a way to motivate the Minnesota book. So let's take a listen to this clip.
Vikings at their own 39. It's third down. Three receivers right, Thielen left. Marshawn Lattimore, 12 yards from Adam. Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Caught by Diggs. Stay
oh,
back.
My God. Oh, my God.
30.
No 10.
Way.
Touchdown.
Are you kidding me? It's a Minneapolis miracle. Stephon Diggs and the Minnesota Vikings have walked off on the New Orleans Saints. It's a 61-yard Minneapolis miracle. I can't believe what I just saw, Kyle. What an unbelievable play. Fans at U.S. Bank Stadium are embracing each other. They're trying to climb into the box to hug us all. Nobody can find Stephon.
the tunnel. Unbelievable, Paul.
Are you kidding me?
They run the deep out route. Stephon Diggs goes up, and Marcus Williams, the rookie, tries to jump over the back of him to break up the throw. The ball is caught, and Diggs is able to take it into the end zone.
Look at the Vikings
so
coaches.
This is just
right
an absolute mistake.
Yes!
Are you kidding me?
Look at these Vikings coaches. Yes! Let's go to Philadelphia.
Hey, Matthias, you do remember that, don't you?
Of course I do.
All right. I'll tell you what, Marnie, thanks for sticking around for that. We love you, and take care. We love you.
Okay, all right. Love you guys. Yeah, that was a great moment for the Vikings. Really good one. All right, well, have a great night, and we'll talk soon. Thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye. All right, so we're going to take a commercial break, and then we're going to be back with our next exciting guest. So do not go away. Stay with us. It's going to be great.
Hello?
And ladies and gentlemen, stepping out of the green room, walking down the aisle, he is our third guest on the docket. He's got a great book out. He's going to tell us everything about it. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you our guest at this time. He's going to tell you about When You Step Upon a Star. He is William Keck.
I love that introduction. Thank you for that. You know, I just heard your last guest. She sounded great. But I am not interested in getting kids interested in reading. In fact, kids should stay away from my book.
Well, that's really going to warm you up to our audience.
It's true. Well, kids should stay away from my book, but adults will find it fascinating. It's a lesson of redemption. And, yeah.
All right, so here's how we're going to do this, William. I'm going to ask you a few questions, then we'll do a round table, and we'll have you come back to me, and I'll ask you the tougher questions. But before we do that, give us a little background about yourself.
You bet. Sure thing. So I grew up in upstate New York. I came out to California in 1990. I wanted to get into the movie business, but what I really wanted was to meet all of the old Hollywood stars before they started dying. And I worked for Aaron Spelling Productions on Dynasty and Melrose Place. But then I was offered an opportunity to work for the National Enquirer as a tabloid reporter, and that enabled me to meet all these celebrities. But I was meeting them by crashing their hospital rooms and weddings and funerals, and I made a lot of enemies out of the celebrities that I worship.
Well, there's one little thing you missed. You forgot to mention there. You said another reason why you want to get into this is because you eventually want to get on the Icon Radio Attitude Era Monday Live Monday. That was another thing, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this moment, this is my dream come true, the apex. Thank you for making my dream come true.
And you got to admit, that's probably got to be, and I know I'm tooting my own horn here, but that's got to be the best introduction you ever had, right?
Well, you know, without a doubt, hands down. I'm going to have to write a second book. And I'm going to have to start digging through your garbage and find out your secrets.
And I'd love to write the foreword for that book. We have William Keck as our guest here. He wrote a book, When You Step Upon a Star. So basically, the way I'm interpreting that title is that you ticked off a lot of celebrities or. You pried in a lot of celebrities' lives and they don't like you a lot, or kind of tell us about how the title of the book came about.
Yeah, I was on a dog walk, and my partner actually suggested it. We were coming around, we were trying to come up with names, and it was, we had Bad Will Hunting, my name is Will, and we tried all different things, but When You Step Upon a Star really just kind of spelled it out, and that led to the illustration, which is my foot stepping down on one of the Hollywood Walk of Fame stars. Back then I did anger a lot of those people, but it's a redemption story. It's my mea culpa. And cut to 30 years later, I've worked with a lot of these celebrities as a producer, and I've made friends with a lot of these celebrities. So a lot of the celebs that I rubbed the wrong way back in the day are now contributing essays in my book. So I have people like Sybil Shepherd and Linda Gray from Dallas and Melissa Gilbert from Little House on the Prairie writing words of forgiveness for me and supporting my kind of overall message is that you can learn from your mistakes. You can't go back and change the dirt from your past, but you can learn from that and be a different person going forward.
And, you know, I'll tell you what, in a way, I'm kind of like that. And anybody will tell you, and it's kind of a flaw of mine. Whenever I meet a celebrity, I always kind of put them on a pedestal. Maybe I shouldn't. And maybe we can talk about that towards the end when we come
you
back
bet.
To me. But
I'd love to.
I like to put stars on a pedestal. Like when Eric Bischoff was here, and I know Matthias will tell a little story about that. But if you're a celebrity, I put you on a star. And some people say that I sometimes go above and beyond and basically smother them. And I don't mean to, and I don't know I'm doing it because I'm so mesmerized by them. Is that a bad thing?
You know, I will tell you, I think it is. And the story that comes to mind, I have a chapter in my book about William Shatner. I asked William Shatner a question that pissed him off. But what I found with Bill Shatner is that he gets so much adoration from the Star Trek fans. Oh, my God, we love you, and we love Captain Kirk, and when you come back to Star Trek, he hears that all day long. So when he encounters somebody who just kind of gives it back to him, I mean, he busts my balls, I bust his balls. And he has a great sense of humor, and I think respects when people don't put him on a pedestal. So, I mean, I imagine there are some celebrities who do expect to be treated like the king or the queen, but I think most of them just want to connect as a human and not be treated as some kind of a museum figure.
So I guess with that being said, if I meet William Shatner, which I would like to do, I'll talk to him more about T.J. Hooker and his battle with Jerry the King Lawler.
Sure, and you mention his toupee, too. He'll love that.
Well, I don't want him to pull out his laser,
his laser
and serve
gun?
Me to a Klingon, but
No, he's a good guy. I mean, he really is. And, you know, he wrote a book about his lifelong adoration of horses. And I asked him a question. He was coming on a show that I produced over at the Hallmark Channel. And I asked him how many horses he had. And he just kind of clammed up. He got very serious. He said, William, would you ever ask a man how much he makes? And I said, no, I wouldn't ask that, Mr. Shatner. He said, well, asking a man how many horses he has is just like asking someone their salary. You don't do that. So when he came onto the show, that was a pre-interview I did with him, I surprised him with an artist rendering of William Shatner in his heyday with his barrel chest and the curly hair on his chest, but in the form of a centaur. In his book, he had written that he had a dream, a recurring dream, where he was running through the forest as a half-man, half-horse beast. And so I had this portrait made and framed and gave it to him, and, man, he loved it. He got a big kick out of that.
That's awesome. We have William Keck is our guest here on 89.1 Ken's FM, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to toss it on over to the modern nightmare Matthias, and then we're going to come back to me, and I'm going to ask you some tougher questions. But he has a little different thing that he does with celebrities. He just likes to beat them up. So, Matthias, or Nightmare, what do you got? Go ahead.
Well, yes, you are talking to the man from every woman's greatest dream and every man's worst nightmare, North Dakota's number one heel, current reigning, defending, undisputed APW World Heavyweight Champion, NSC World Tag Team Champion, Rudo's Promotions All-Weight Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion, General Manager of Flashback Pro Wrestling, and soon to be Below Zero Wrestling, Flashback Pro Wrestling, and NSC World Heavyweight Champion, and honorary member of the New World Order.
Has been paid for by the New World Order.
Matthias, welcome on to my part of the program. Yes, as Icon did say, I do tend to beat up people that call themselves celebrities inside of my ring, and I'm definitely not afraid to throw them through a pile of thumbtacks, broken glass, barbed wire, cut up cans. It doesn't matter. I'll make you bleed your own blood, and I'll embarrass you, and I'll take your woman to the back when I'm done with you. But anyway, my main part, this is my part of the program now, so... Yes, as Icon did say, I tend to beat up people that call themselves celebrities, but I have met quite a few celebrities in my day,
And as Icon has mentioned before, and he'll say it over and over again, he calls people his heroes and he wants to, you know, overwhelm them with questions and stuff like that. And I completely agree with you in regards to the whole William Shatner stuff, because there's some people out there that think they deserve to be praised or want to be praised like that, want to be put up on this pedestal, where there's a lot of people that just want to be treated like a human being, whereas such as with people in the wrestling industry. Now, I've met people that have wrestled back in the 70s and 80s. I've wrestled people that have just since retired from wrestling, or they made it to the big time, and then they left the big time and are wrestling it in the indie circuit now. I've met many people who I've watched on TV, and I've done all this kind of stuff. But again, as you said, it's always nice to treat them like human beings, and that's exactly what they want to do. When we step into a wrestling locker room, per se, and you meet somebody that's been on TV for 15 years and somebody I used to watch as a kid, I got to sit next to them and just talk with them like they were a human being and learn from them, and that's always a great experience. But yeah, I got to say, that would also kind of bother me, too. I mean, people come up to me like I'm a celebrity because, you know, I am a celebrity. And, you know, I may, depending on, like, I'll tell you a story. So
okay.
My show last weekend, I'm just hanging out, right? I'm just doing my own thing. And I'm decided there's pizza in our catering table. I'm like, you know, I'm going to have me a couple slices of pizza. And I'm sitting there, and I'm just having my pizza, and I'm just hanging out after the show. And a couple people just come up and swarm me with autographs. And I'm like, you know what, can I eat my pizza first? And they screamed no, and they decided to hit me with their autograph books. Now, I could have done something about that. Yeah, exactly. You know, I could have done something about it, but, you know, I put my pizza down. Politely, I put it down, and I signed the autographs, even though I shouldn't have, because then after they left, they decided to say a bunch of horrible things about me because apparently they didn't like me, which was their own issue. But my main question to you would be,
what's the question?
Now that I told
love it.
All that story and I went off on the rant and all that kind of stuff, you know, I guess after I went off on all that, I didn't even expect that to come out. It just came out.
Oh, my God. Who the hell cares?
And I know exactly who's behind doing that on the board. If you do that again, we're going to have serious issues. But anyway, so my main question to you would be, sir, what got you into doing this, like writing that book? What made you feel like, hey, I want to do this. I want to get in people's personal lives. I want to do all that kind of stuff. What was one of your main influences going into that kind of stuff, going into that work?
Well, you know, I spent 3 years at the National Enquirer before going on to legit publications like USA Today and TV Guide and People Entertainment Weekly. But the stories that everybody always wanted to hear were the horror stories from when I was at the Enquirer, and they wanted to know the dirt. I write in the front of the book that I could have written a book about all the wonderful interviews that went so well, everyone was happy, but it's the ones that really were disastrous, where I got in trouble, that people wanted to know about. So, yeah, I write about being in a tree spying on Dean Martin's funeral, and I talk about being escorted out of John Candy's funeral as I'm looking at Danny DeVito, Rhea Perlman, Dan Aykroyd waiting for me to vacate the premises so they can mourn their friend. So, I write about infiltrating the home of Nicole Brown Simpson, her family, just 3 days after she was buried, to land the very first interview with the family. And I did. I did some reprehensible things. Listen, I'm proud that I had the balls to be able to go after these interviews and that I didn't cower. You know, I'm proud that I manned up. But I did some pretty despicable things. And if people were entering my family's hospital rooms when they were trying to recover, well, I'd punch them in the face.
Exactly. I mean,
I was going to say, to answer your question, you know, these are the stories, Mateus, that people wanted to hear. And so during COVID, I sat in my garage and I went through all my notebooks and photos and article clippings, and I decided what to keep and what to throw away. And the juiciest stuff, the action stuff where I'm running, being chased, you know, I'm getting punched, I'm getting grabbed, molested. These are the stories that I thought would make a good book.
And I'll tell you what, that is incredible. Like and as I talked to our previous guest, I'm not one big into reading, but I'm gonna have to pick up a copy of this because I want to hear these stories. Because you said a lot of people are interested in the dirtier stories, the more horror stories for such. That's why, like, popular shows such as like Dark Side of the Ring or Dark Side of the 90s or Dark Side of Comedy. Like all those are so popular because people want to know, like people hear about all the good that gets published everywhere, but nobody really hears about the dark, intimate, scary stories or, you know, what you've had to do to get those kind of stories where you've had to climb trees or infiltrate homes. And I personally, as a fellow guy like that, I commend you for doing that kind of stuff and giving us that content. That's incredible. And doing the stuff that you did to get there, a lot of people, as you said, would not have the cojones to do that. They would, you know, they would back down and they wouldn't do what they needed to do to get that content. So I applaud you personally. And it's kind of like with me in the ring, too. I'm sitting there and I'm doing my own thing. I'm doing what I need to do. I'm going in there and I'm beating somebody up. And people are always like, well, you're such a bad guy. You're so mean. It's like, well, if you wouldn't raise your voice at me and say horrible things to me, I wouldn't do that. But for another story is I'm standing there and I'm doing my own thing in the ring last weekend. I roll up my piece of tape because, you know, it's on my wrist. It's annoying me. I'm choking the guy out with it. And after I got done with it, I wrapped it up and threw it at the audience because, you know, I don't care what they think. Did they like me? Great. They hate me. I don't care. But apparently some guy, it hit him in the head. It hit him in the head. Uh-oh. And I watched it directly go across, and it hit him across the head, and it fell to the ground. And he, you know, looked at me. He laughed it off. He went and grabbed it, and he gave it to his kid. Well, and apparently he went and complained to the person that ran the show, saying, oh, I didn't like how I was talking to my four-year-old, and your general manager hit me with his wrist tape. I didn't really much care for that. And it's like, you know, I had to go out there. And it's,
please, come on.
Exactly. Like in my head, he's like, the promoter's like, hey, can you just talk to the guy? And I'm like, whatever, you know, I'll say something. But it's like in my head, I just wanted to be like, really? You think you deserve, like, you go to a show, you go to some place that involves physical altercation,
yeah.
And if something is a light piece of tape hits you in the head, you want to complain about it? Like, do you really deserve that? I'm like, I didn't say it. I wanted to, but I just, it's like,
well,
you know,
I mean, with the kid there, I guess you can't say it. You don't want to shame the dad in front of the kid. But, yeah, what kind of lesson is that for the kid? You know, he had an opportunity to go, you know what, things happen. I got hit in the face, but we're here at a wrestling match. You know, we're part of the action. Laugh it off, and the kid learns that that's the way you live your life, and you live a happy life.
Exactly. And I watched the tape back, and I'm like, really? You're going to say you were so stressed out and so angry that my tape hit you in the head and you were talking to your four-year-old all the time? It's like, well, then if you were paying attention to the wrestling, if you were paying attention to me and not talking to your snotty four-year-old, you know, if you would have been paying attention, it wouldn't have hit you. And it's like, I want to say that, and I should have said it in time, but I didn't. I just kept my cool and stuff like that. But, you know, and I've had to do things in the wrestling industry I'm not too proud of to get where I am today. I've hurt some people. I've ended some careers per se. I've done what I needed to do. I put these people through barbed wire and thumbtacks and broken glass and cut up cans, and I've made people bleed their own blood, and I've shed some tears. I've sweated through all of it. The stories I have in the wrestling industry is just incredible. But I'm also interested in hearing a lot of your stories. Like you said, you climbed the tree, you infiltrated homes and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's kind of like we
high-speed chases. Yeah, high-speed chases with Britney Spears and Elizabeth Taylor. I mean, all that kind of stuff. And you know, I'll send you a book. You don't have to buy my book. If you get me your address, Mateus, I'll send you a free autographed copy.
Well, I will beg you for that at the end here. Absolutely.
Okay,
I'm so down. I can't wait to read these stories. And if you ever want to come on and just, you know, shoot the stuff, I would love to hear all these stories, like all these really good, nerdy, dirty, gritty stories, and I would like to tell you some of mine. But let me just say, it's been cool, you know, getting to learn about this stuff for me, and I can't wait to read your book. What would you say, and I know a lot of times, you know, people say they don't have regrets in life and stuff like that, you know, all that kind of stuff, like life is full of regrets, but I ain't got none. It's like, well, you know, sometimes you can. Is there one event that you ever could say, you know, maybe I don't think I should have done this, like I regret this a little bit, or are you just like, you know, I have no regrets, I did what I needed to do to get the story, I did what I had to do?
Well, yeah, I mean, no, sure there are. I mean, George Peppard, you know, he was on the A-Team and Breakfast at Tiffany's. He was a classic leading man. And I got an interview with his doctor right after he died by saying that I was a family member, friend of the family, that I was going to write the obituary, that I was going to write the eulogy. And so the doctor and the nurse just blabbed and gave me the whole story about how he really died and personal details about his final moments. The Inquirer, my editors were thrilled. It was like working for the mafia, you know, like, wow, great, you got in there. But I got in there by lying to a medical professional who was there to help save this guy's life. I mean, yeah, that kind of stuff I think is pretty slimy. But when in another situation, the actor who played Kojak, I don't know if you remember Telly Savalas before your time, but he also played Blofeld in one of the James Bond movies.
I have
was
a question
buried,
about that.
Yeah.
Does Telly Savalas love you, baby?
Well, he was dead by the time I interacted with him. He was buried in an unmarked grave. So in order to get a tombstone installed, I pretended to be his son, and I called Forest Lawn Cemetery, and I said, hey, what's the problem? Why isn't Dad's headstone installed? And they said, well, you know, Mr. Savalas, that none of the family is getting along. So I said, well, yeah, you know, why don't you just give them all a call and say we'll install the damn stone Tuesday at 4 o'clock. And so the calls were made, the family showed up, and I got Telly Savalas the headstone at Forest Lawn Cemetery. I don't know. I don't regret that one. I think the family should be happy that I actually got their dad a headstone.
That is awesome. You know,
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those celebrities do have unmarked graves, like John Wayne has an unmarked.
Probably on purpose, though, because he doesn't want grave robbers to come. I mean, remember that episode of Lucille Ball where Lucy and Ethel stole John Wayne's hand and footprints from the Walk of Fame? So John Wayne probably doesn't want his tombstone to be stolen, so that's why he's in an unmarked grave.
That was a classic episode, too. We have we have William Keck as our guest here, and we got about 10 minutes left here. For those of you who listen to our show on a regular basis, if you go to our Facebook page, Attitude Era, Monday Live Monday, like that. Go to Ken's FM page, 89.1, like that. Do a $10 a month donation to the Power of the Tower. We'll get you automatically qualified to win an autograph copy of an autograph from past guests, future guests, or current guests. Do you think you'd be willing to send us a few books for giveaways and one that we can fight over?
I'd be happy to send you a couple, and I promised Mateus one. So, yeah, I can put 3 in the mail for you, sure.
All right, I'll send you that address on Messenger. So now with this book, it's an awesome book. I cannot wait to read it. But do you have plans on like doing any more, like a sequel or behind the scenes from when you stepped on stars, stuff you didn't see in the first one or anything like that?
Well, I got to tell you, before I signed the contract with my publisher, I maintain the TV or movie adaptation rights. And a lot of people who've read the book say that it reads like a TV series or a movie. Like I mentioned, it's all action stories where I'm in a high-speed chase or I'm being, you know, shackled by security guards, you know, or spying on Sean Penn in the hospital while his wife was in another room, very sadly miscarrying their child. This was on Oscar night when he was in a tuxedo. He was supposed to show up to the Academy Awards, but instead had to go with his wife to the hospital, and I was sitting next to him without him knowing that I was a tabloid reporter. So I think these are kinds of visual stories that can make a really good movie, but there's an arc to this as well. I'm not just some bastard. I learn the error of my ways. I change. Every one of the 39 chapters ends with a lesson learned. It's a lesson that I learned. It's a lesson that I think your listeners can apply to their own lives. Some of the lessons are just very funny and humorous, but at the end you see that I'm no longer the same man that I was back in my reckless 20s.
You know, one other quick story I have, and I don't want to bore you with it because this is your time.
No,
but,
not at all. Please, tell me.
Alexander Buff Bagwell was here in Fargo, and, you know, we were talking about how I'm overwhelmed, and I love celebrities, you know. And there was apparently people thought I was kind of overbearing with Buff Bagwell. And to this day, everybody thinks there's heat between he and I. And I actually called him, you know, because he gave me his number. And I do have your number, by the way. And I promise I'll stop calling you at 2 in the morning. But, the cool thing is, you know, everybody thought there was heat because, you know, he told me to get away from him, you know. And I understood that. And people thought there was heat. But I talked to him about 2 weeks later. And he said, no, you and I don't have any issues. It's just that, you know, you kind of need to step back every once in a while. You know, and I've never learned that, and I don't know why I don't do that.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm going to point this out because I personally, when I deal with people like that, like I got to meet Eric Bischoff. I got to work with Eric Bischoff. I actually got to have him manage one of my opponents in the ring. And him and I almost got physical for many different reasons, but that's because he, you know, screwed me out of the match. But anyway, when it comes to people like that, when they tell, like, they, when it comes to, like, people, like, and me being a wrestler, as I say, I'm a very popular guy. People want to surround me for autographs and photos, and that's great. But when you get all up in somebody's business for too long, when they're trying to get to everybody, like, for instance, we have a intermission period. And we have about, like, 15 minutes where you could go up, you could talk to a wrestler, you know, you can shake a hand, whatever, leave. Well, when it comes to, like, the bigger names, the people that have appeared in the WWE and WCW and WWF and all this stuff, they've got hundreds of people trying to talk to them at one time. So, basically, it's you get there, you say, hello, how are you? You get your stuff signed, you take a photo, you go. When it comes to that kind of, like, not many people get to have a sit-down personal conversation with a celebrity or personal thing, unless you are a reporter or a fellow person doing exactly what it is they're doing. You don't typically
right.
go to shows or go somewhere and you get to sit down and have a conversation with them. You're not interviewing them, you're just meeting them. Whereas
right.
people, when they come to shows and they're in the locker room with me and they're not doing anything, I go, hey, can nice to meet you. Do you have a second to talk? And they say, yeah, I'll sit down and ask them a couple questions about their career. Or I'll say, hey, can you do something for me tonight? Or, hey, can you show me how to do this or whatever? But I don't sit there and talk to them for 45 minutes either because they got a life to do. I've got my life
Absolutely.
To do. And
that's right. That's
you have
right.
the general conversation.
Yep.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
You know, it's just like going to your friend's party. You know, you don't want to be the one who stays there the longest. You go in there, you have a good time, you shake some hands, you have some cocktails, and then you get out of there. You know, you don't want to, like, just monopolize the person until they want you to leave. Leave when on your own terms, I think.
Exactly, because if I were to go up to somebody there and say, hey, get away from me, that already
yeah.
tells me, hey, I'm either bothering them, I'm staying way too long, or I'm looking like an idiot in front of a bunch of people.
That's
myself,
right. And I got to say, you know, most of the celebrities that I met along the way, they were very courteous. Even when I was there in awkward situations, they treated me fairly well. And there's one celebrity, though, I write about in the book. He was a 90s sitcom star. He won some Emmys. And he did not like that I showed up at his house asking about some infidelity rumors that we heard. And he pummeled me. He beat me to a bloody pulp. As his neighbors came out, I was screaming. The neighbors came out, and they were watching, doing nothing. And this is the only name in the book that I can't reveal. This actor and I, we signed a confidentiality agreement. But I dropped some hints in that chapter, and people might be able to figure out who it is. But because I can't reveal his face, I filled that chapter with photos of me wrestling a 600-pound bear. And that's one of the other things the Inquirer had me do, is do these crazy stunts. So, you know, the book is just wild and crazy. So, I mean, there's really something in there for everybody, whether you love celebrities, if you're curious about how the tabloids got their stories back in the day, or if you just want to follow a guy's story of redemption, how he went from being a tabloid sleazeball to a pretty decent guy who gets to be on your amazing show.
And well, I'm more than willing to read it. I can't wait.
Well, one thing I do want to ask, you know, and we can't really talk politics on this station, but you know, the National Enquirer was in the news here about a month
oh, yeah.
ago because they were involved. Were you with the Enquirer at that time or not?
No. I walked away from the Enquirer many, many, many years ago, and I went legit. But you're talking about the Stormy Daniels catch and kill
yeah.
lawsuit
yep.
with Donald Trump. And, yeah, I mean, that became a really big story. Now, I was not there at a time when I was aware of catch and kill, but what I can tell you is the Inquirer was all about keeping any items that could be used for blackmail. And when I was there, I was very surprised. Bill Cosby was still a huge, huge star. The Cosby Show had been on the air. He was still America's favorite dad. And they could get Bill Cosby to come on the phone anytime they wanted to for some little puff piece about the Father's Day tips or, you know, being a good dad. And I'm like, how is the Inquirer getting Bill Cosby to talk to them? Well, later I found out that they knew all the stuff that we know now. They had a dossier on him in a safe in the home office in Lantana, Florida. And Cosby knew if I don't talk to the Inquirer, when they call me up, well, then my secrets are going to get exposed. Quickly, one other time, I got nude photos sent of Don Johnson from Miami Vice. We didn't run them, but the Inquirer sure as hell wanted to hold on to them in case they ever needed them for a Don Johnson story. So those are some of the tricks of the trade that I reveal in the book.
Well, I know I shouldn't say this, but I'd rather have nude pictures of his daughter than, rather than him, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, we have William Keck as our guest here, and we only got about 60 seconds left. So our fans can check out and see, do you got a Facebook, an Instagram, YouTube, a Twitter, a Twitch, a TikTok? How do they get your book? Let us know.
Well, yeah. Everything is under the name of my book, When You Step Upon a Star. So you can find that on Instagram. You can go to whenyoustepuponastar.com, and you can find the book on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. If you read Kindle, Apple Books, it's available in all those different places.
And real quick here, there's one thing I do want to ask you about. I'm sure you've probably seen Men in Black, talked about it in the movie, how they get the information about aliens by picking up copies of the National Enquirer. did the National Enquirer, or you probably don't know this, but did they pay to let them use them, or did they have to get permission to use them, I suppose?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. You mean Men in Black specifically, that movie?
Well, yeah, because, you know, at the end in the movie, Tommy Lee Jones says, let's go find out the dirt. Then they go pick up the National Enquirer at the newsstand to find out about alien activity.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, sure, the Enquirer knew all about that stuff as well. I mean, they knew which senators were aliens from outer space. They knew where Bigfoot was hiding, and they know exactly where Elvis Presley is living today in 2024. And I'll tell you all about that next time I'm on your show.
What about Bat Boy? Can you tell us about Bat Boy?
You know, Bat Boy is going to be a TV series, and I'm dead serious. They just announced they're going to adapt the Bat Boy into a weekly show. I don't know really what it's going to be about. It's about a small town where a Bat Boy comes in and mixes with the kids. So I love Bat Boy. I'm excited Bat Boy's coming back. That was the Examiner, though. That wasn't the Enquirer. I think that was the Examiner.
Well, I'll tell you what. You definitely, in this interview, you definitely gave the definition to Inquiring Minds Want to Know. And, you know, you have been awesome, and we would and I do want to thank, give a shout-out to Harlan, HB, for having you, for setting us up together. And hopefully we can have you on again.
He's great. I would love that. Hopefully. I had so much fun with you guys, and I feel like we've only just scratched the surface, and I can talk to you about scratch the surface. And I can tell you about meeting Lou Ferrigno and Jesse Ventura and Hulk Hogan and so many more stories that we can talk about another time.
Well, I found out what happens when you call Lou Ferrigno's house. I can tell you a story about that.
What? Tell me.
Well, we're gonna save that. We're gonna save that.
Okay. All right. We'll save that for next time. You name it. I'm happy to come back and play with you guys. You're fun.
And here's how we'll do it. If you can send us a couple of books, Matthias and I will read it, and then we'll I'll contact you, and then we'll. And not that you care, but we're actually booked on our docket till the end of 2026. But I do believe I have a couple.
Congratulations.
I do have a couple openings in 2025. I do need to fill, so I want to get you into the earliest I can. We'll take time to read the book, and then we'll bring you back on, and we'll talk more about that.
I love that. I'll keep an eye out for your address, and I'll get some of those in the mail to you ASAP.
And I sent that to you on Messenger. I also will tell you the story about what happens when you send William Conrad the wrong number to a radio station you work at. I'll tell you about that as well.
Yeah, he was a tough guy. He's the one he dare you to knock the battery off his shoulder, right? I dare you. Come on, I dare you.
Yep, and I can also tell you about calling Pierce Brosnan and talking to his wife instead of talking to the publicist first. I got many stories about that. I used to be a producer for a local, a nationally syndicated talk show. And I'll tell you a few stories about that, and we'll fill in the book, and maybe we can maybe get, like, part two when you step upon a show about stars.
I would love that. And I can tell you why, you know, some of the quotes on the back of the book. There's Bruce Willis saying, "I'm going to come and burn your house down, Keck." I have Kelsey Grammer telling me I'm going to fry in hell. So I'll tell you the stories about why I pissed off Kelsey Grammer and Leonard Nimoy and even Dick Van Dyke. All those stories we can talk about next time. And they're all in the book.
Awesome.
Right,
and to be honest with you, I don't really like Kelsey Grammer anyway, so I can't wait to talk about that. But I'll tell you what. I want to talk about that because I don't like that guy. And then we can dig up the, like, I can't remember the wrestler's name. He used to say, "What's the dirt, my boy? The boy, what's the dirt?" That's a wrestling term. But I'll tell you what, you are awesome, and we're definitely going to have you on again. I'm going to check the schedule. I'm going to text it to you, and we'll get you on our first next opening in 2025. We'll get you on.
I can't wait, and can't wait to hear what you think of the book. Thank you so much, guys. So much fun.
Take care, bud. You're awesome. We love you.
Love you, too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, we only got a few minutes left here. That was a fun show, wasn't it, Matthias?
As always.
All right, so we got about 5 minutes left here of time here. And as you know, it's not goodbye. It's just goodnight. Love each other. Care for each other. Be back with us every Monday night here on 89.1 Ken's FM. And we're here every Monday night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Central Standard Time. 120 minutes of pure entertainment. And real quick here, Matthias, let us know where your matches are this weekend coming up.
My first match is going to be in Chisago, Minnesota. I forgot it's not in Minneapolis. It's a little north of Minneapolis in a brewery. I don't know who. I think I'll be wrestling a fellow opponent by the name of Jake Taylor in a no-holds-barred, no-referee, no-disqualification match, so that's going to be interesting. Maybe I'll drown him in some beer and I'll win the match. We'll see. And then the next match on this Saturday, the 17th, will be at the Lights in West Fargo, North Dakota, where I will be taking on. It's to be determined. It hasn't been posted yet on social media, but I will not. So I will not give away any information in regards to that. I have been told who I'm working, but I will not be posting anything about it until the post comes up. But I believe I'll be competing for a new championship there. And then that'll be a little bit of a break till for the next week, and then it'll be back to business again as usual.
Well, you know, I did see a poster about that, and I was wondering why you weren't on it, so now I know why.
Absolutely.
All right, and my goal is to come to that match. As a matter of fact, I may be getting a part-time job working security at that venue.
At the Lights?
Yes.
Well, if you do, I applaud you. I worked for the Lights myself under West Fargo Events Security, and I hated it. It was a very bad experience for me personally, but that's just a different story for a different time. I did not agree with the guy who ran the thing for many different reasons, but if you do get it and end up working that's awesome. And if everything works out in that career choice with security, then that's amazing. I just didn't experience too well with it.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We got to get out of here. Remember, love each other, care for each other, be safe as always. Come join us every Monday night. We're here to entertain you. So with that being said, good night, everybody. We will be back next week. Stay tuned.